nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when you don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me a bit. Homegrown tomatoes.
In the Garden with Ed Bajarski and me, Oren, is brought to you in part by the Flower Farm, which is busting out with new starts for the coming season. Lettuce, basil, Swiss chard, kale, and spinach are ready to go. So they've got your hit of spring ready for you out there at 6 Rory Road, and you can call them at 772-3064. Speaking of calling, if you want to, today you can call in and ask Ed a gardening question. Our number here is 772-3808. Feel free to call in during the show today if you want to put a question to Master Gardener Ed Bajarski. Put a homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What will life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. Alrighty, and welcome to the phones, Ed Bajarski.
Good afternoon, Lauren.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Well, I'm optimistic. I know it's lightly raining here, which is a good thing to help the snow melt away, and still, it's looking more likely than it was last week. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. So you're still certainly not thawed and digging around yet. You're still in prep mode.
Oh, no. No, we've got a foot and a half to 2 feet of snow on the level in my yard. So it is what it is. I'm gardening indoors. So started some tomato and delphinium seeds this morning. And we're starting to wake up the fuchsias and the begonias. And hopefully by the time we return from a vacation, the snow will be gone and the flowers will be blooming and we'll be ready for it.
All right. That sounds real good. I think we're a little bit ahead of the game down here. We've had melting temperatures lately, a little bit of rain off and on, and we can kind of feel things starting to soften up. I'm sure nobody's really digging in the garden or planting outside yet, but what should people be thinking as far as where we at? What's the...
Well, certainly, yeah. Like I mentioned, waking up the fuchsias and begonias. Well, fuchsias at least. Mm-hmm. I was in my root cellar getting some potatoes out for eating, and which is where I store some fuchsia plants that I overwinter. Mm-hmm. So I gave them a shot of water. They'll be fine for a while. And again, like I said, 2 weeks from now when we return, they should be sprouting some if I have watered them enough to keep them alive. If I didn't, then they'll be dead. Then they'll be just sticks.
Yeah.
The begonias that were, and those are tuberous begonias, those I had left them in the pots. They were on the stairs going up to my second floor of my garage. And some of those already had tiny pink buds. So those, what I did with them, I dug them out of the soil, gently took off much of the soil from them, and put them into waterproof trays with some potting soil, and then got them damp, and they are under lights.
Mm.
So those definitely will be growing. And again, by normally, as far as timing goes, hopefully under lights, I can get to maybe some 3 to 4 inch sprouts on them, and then from there they will go back into pots, out into the greenhouse, one of the greenhouses probably, or hoop house, to harden off before they're outdoors mid-May or so, depending on what our weather is like.
Uh-huh. Okay. So you like to revive the begonias under lights?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yes, I do. There's not enough window. I mean, I think I have, or let's see, 4 trays, which turns into about 30 or 35 begonias, some of which are almost a pound a piece. I mean, they're big tubers. I've had them probably 5-6 years or more.
Yeah.
So there isn't enough window space for all of those, besides which I have orchids and other stuff in my windows in the house.
Mm-hmm.
So under lights is my alternative, is my only alternative, and my greenhouses are not heated.
Right.
If I had heated greenhouses, they could be out there. So that they'd be, say, up in the 50s, which is what my garage is, where the lights are. So that works well. And the other thing is, too, if people don't have much for begonias, they are certainly appearing in the local retailers, so you can go and buy your own tubers and do exactly the same thing. You know, you start them out in small pots, and then as they grow, you can move them up into bigger pots. Because these, now these big ones I talked about, some of those are going to be in 5-gallon pots this summer. So they're going to need room. They'll be well fed, and I'll use my organic fertilizer plus some liquid fertilizer during the summer too. And, you know, big, beautiful blooms in all colors.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah, begonias are great. If somebody has a smaller number of tubers that they're trying to activate, does a window work pretty well?
Yeah, that's fine. And, you know, our day length, we're over 12 hours now that it's officially spring.
Uh-huh.
So that's pretty good. And kind of like I mentioned, I think, last time about growing stuff in windows, you want to rotate them. Because the growth will lean toward the light, toward the brightest light. Mm. So, you know, if you rotate them a couple times a week or something like that, is definitely worthwhile. And I'll do the same thing with anything else, too. The tomatoes that I started, they're under lights. But again, any of those plants want to be rotated. And if you're growing things under, and I'm using just 4-foot fluorescent shop light fixtures, with just standard bulbs, nothing fancy there. They aren't the extra expensive plant light bulbs specifically. They too need to be rotated, though for a different reason, and that is because underneath the light levels underneath a 4-foot long tube, they're brightest in the center, and they kind of drop off toward the ends. So if you've got, say, 2 trays underneath a fixture, or I usually have double fixtures but still have, you know, 2 trays, or if I put them crosswise, I can get 4 trays underneath a double fixture. If we rotate the trays themselves, then again, they get more even light. You know, they get a similar amount of time in the center of the tubes versus down near the end of the tubes where there isn't quite as much light. So that's worthwhile considering, too, when you're setting up your light system. You know, it doesn't need to be anything fancy. There's plenty of storage units or shelving units that you can pick up, you know, from your local hardware store or whatever, that you can attach lights to the underside of the shelves, and then you have your plants right underneath those. And I've got, again, with starting from seed or starting seedlings, we want those as close to the lights as we can, like 2 to 4 inches away. And so what I do, rather than, and usually these lights come with chains that you can hang them from, and they're adjustable up and down, I rather use, have my lights all the way to the top of the shelf, underside of the shelf, and I've got all these scraps of 2x4s that I use for raising and lowering these trays underneath them, so I can have 2 different heights or 2 different trays full of plants that are of different heights under the same light system.
Ah, you just blew my mind. Oh my gosh, that makes so much sense. Yeah,
it's a lot easier than moving the chains, the lights on the chains up and down. Trust me, I've been there, done that.
Well, and even just attaching it to the underside of a shelf. Oh my gosh, that is way tidier than my disasters when I try to rig up sprouting light situations. Boy, oh boy, that is tidy and clever. Wow.
Yeah, and there are, we've got some plans we've shared with the Master Gardeners that came from a long ago, I think it was a Fine Gardening magazine. And what this was, it was a nice setup, basically an A-frame system that was, you know, you just have 4 pieces of 1x4s, and these are like six feet long. I guess you're going to have to use your imagination to visualize this. But hinged at the top, so you have 2 pairs that were hinged at the top that are then can be folded open slightly. And then you have crossbars between each end and a little bit over 4 feet, like 54 inches or something like that. And then just sheets of plywood on top of the crossbars. And again, I've got one with, it's got 3 layers. So lights from the top and the center, and then the bottom one, which is basically at essentially floor level. It's a little less convenient, you know, getting down there to work with them, but you slide the trays out, water them, or do whatever you need to do and rotate them and all of that. But it's a nice system. So you're, you know, this the folding stand itself, you pull the shelves off it at the end of the season, and you can fold the thing together, and it stores in a pretty small space.
Right.
At any rate, it was a really nice, simple design. And again, you've got hooks on there to hang your lights from, and all of that worked really well. Still does. I mean, I've had it for, 20 years at least. You know, still works just fine.
Yeah. Wow.
So yeah. Nice, simple. Keep it simple. That's really worthwhile. You know, get yourself a timer. Plug in your, a multi outlet strip into that. If you're using, you know, if you've got three shelves, you need six. Usually most of these have six plugins, six spaces for plugs. Mm-hmm. And, so everything's all in the same timer. Or if you want a separate, if you want different, you can set up different timers for different plants. Because some do, there are some that would like more light or some that don't need quite as much.
Mm-hmm.
I usually have mine set on, I think, 14 hours, coming on about 8 in the morning, going off at 10 at night, or, you know, whatever is convenient for you.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. That makes sense. Well, I'm going to maybe take an opportunity to remind people that this, if they'd like, they can call in and put a gardening question to the master himself, Ed Byarski, calling in 772-3808. Phone lines are open. If anybody out there has a pressing early season gardening question that they want to put to Ed, I'll just cut in with that little offer to anybody out there. And if the phones do light up, I'll let you know, Ed.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah, these tomatoes, I'm anxious. Well, I mean, I'm going to be gone by the time the tomatoes sprout, which is fine. And then, so I planted the tomatoes into 4-inch pots, 3.5-inch pots that fit 18 to a standard tray. There's multiple seeds in each one, so by the time I get home, maybe a week or two after that, then they'll be ready to be transplanted into individual pots to grow on some more, and I'm going to hope that it's, the spring warms up a little faster than last spring, so maybe I can get those tomato starts into the ground in the greenhouse. I'm hoping in early May rather than, it was almost a, I think it was the third week of May before they went out there. Since we had, even though we had an early spring, it seems like then it got cool, quite cool in later April and May.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to get that greenhouse warmer, staying warmer, ideally staying above 50 or 55 degrees at night, as well as the soil temperatures, too, need to be warmer for when we put that stuff out into the greenhouse.
So it's less of a timing precision thing if people have a heated greenhouse, I suppose. But
it's called cheating, but there's times, you know, how much do you want those first tomatoes to cost?
I suppose so. So just for those who are doing that process, how sprouted do you want those tomatoes to be? Like, how large can our little new tomato plants be before we move them outside?
I like to have something that's, again, it kind of depends on varieties of tomatoes. Some do grow faster than others. Some are determinate. That is, they only grow to a certain height, maybe only 2 or 3 feet tall, and they stop, and then they keep blooming. Where others, indeterminate varieties, will grow to be 6 to 12 feet tall if you have that much space. So those indeterminate ones generally grow faster, which means you got to make space underneath different lights for them, essentially, as they're growing. I'm going to have 6 to 8 week old plants that are going to be, they're seldom 4 inches tall or less. Usually by the time I get them out, last year particularly, some of those were 12 to 18 inches tall. And what I did then, I actually buried them deeper. You can do that with tomatoes. They are perfectly happy, and then I usually bury them at an angle. So I kind of dig a trench, lay the tomato partially down in it with just the top of it sticking out, and pinch off some lower leaves, and then bury those so that they root out from there. And again, that way then I've got either my tomato cages that then go on top of each plant, or I have strings which I use hanging down from crossbars up in my upper rafters of the greenhouse with hooks then that, as the tomato grows up, then they basically are growing up the string with the help of some hooks to hold them, to support them.
Wow. So if you pinch off some lower leaves and bury bury where you've pinched off, new roots will develop into the soil from where those leaves were?
Exactly.
Wow.
Yep. And really, this is no different than what we do with potatoes. You know, they're both in the same family. You know, we talk about hilling potatoes as they grow up, mm-hmm. and the same thing happens for those. They get more roots as you hill the potatoes up, but you also get shoots then that go out from where the base of each leaf, where that will give you more potatoes. So that is, and that's a good thing to have, so you get more potatoes in a given amount of space. With tomato plants, you actually have to pinch the above ground. Again, there's a bud at the base of every leaf. So there you usually have to pinch off some of these sprouts, which come from these buds. Otherwise, you get this huge mass, this bushy tomato plant, which really has more leaves than you need, and it's putting more energy into growing all these sprouts and shoots and leaves. So, like again, I mentioned the two different kinds of plants, the determinate ones that only grow to a certain height for maturity. Those I don't pinch very much. Usually I'll have, you know, four or five stems or maybe a little more. With the indeterminate ones that grow so tall, they do really benefit by having sprouts taken off. Sometimes I'll leave one extra shoot, so it'll actually be, you know, basically a pair of shoots from one root system. And then from there, and it, again, it varies, you know, usually there's three or four leaves come off, and there will be then a stem with flowers on them. So, again, you can kind of get an idea of how many tomatoes you're going to get based on how many leaves and how many flower stems you get.
Right.
So it's definitely worth doing this thinning. And it also, we'll talk about it again later in the season, when you need the air circulation and more light to get to the leaves to help make energy and ripen the tomato plants. Again, that's another reason why we do some of this pinching mm-hmm. of the lower leaf stems, so we do get better air circulation between them. And, of course, part of that is also don't plant them too close together when you have these tiny little plants that are only 4 or 6 inches tall, and you know you're supposed to plant them 1.5 or 2 feet apart, and you can see all this bare space that surely we could get a few more tomato plants in there.
When you're pinching off these tomato plant leaves, is there a good rule of thumb for how much you can pinch off? Is it possible to pinch too many of these stems and leaves off and then harm the plant somehow, reducing its ability to gather light or anything like that? Or
yeah, you wouldn't want to. I mean, the stuff that you want to pinch all the leaves off that you bury. That's otherwise they rot anyway in the soil. So you want to do all of those. Mm-hmm. Above ground, normally you aren't doing too much pinching, certainly pinching some stems. Like I said, for the indeterminate ones, you know, you're going to only leave maybe one or two extra stems at most. And then later in the season, like by August or September, when we're trying, we hope to have lots of tomatoes on there, and now we want them to ripen. Again, it's worth pinching those lower leaves to let more of the sun, more of the light in to hit the fruits. Mm-hmm. So as long as you're leaving, you know, a dozen or more leaves up in the higher parts of that later, again, the plant is still photosynthesizing. We need that to ripen those final fruits. But, we can be pinching up the lower ones and, again, getting that extra air circulation and maybe with the help of an extra fan or something like that in the greenhouse, too.
Mm-hmm. And the main point of that air circulation is to keep mold off.
Exactly, right.
Yeah. Cool.
Keep the plant healthier longer, and you'll get more tomatoes. And that's what the game is all about.
Yes, absolutely. Wow, I'm getting hungry just thinking about it. You know, we're so far
yeah,
off
me too.
Fresh tomatoes.
The nice thing is, if nothing else, even just those first, the young tomato plants smell like tomatoes, you know. So
yeah.
I'll go in there once they're up and growing a couple inches tall, even just brushing your hand across those leaves, which is good to kind of stimulate to help toughen up leaves if you're doing this gently. But you get the smell of that tomato leaves, which you're anticipating.
Yeah, that's a fresh taste right there. You can feel it. Oh yeah. Well, is there any other key points that people should be thinking about this time of year? I know we're going to take a little break while you go on a trip, and that'll give time for some snow to melt. But what should people be thinking about over the course of the next few weeks as far as
that. Oh, yeah. Well, looking, this again, we are starting in, other than the really early stuff I mentioned about parsley and herbs to start early, or lettuce, not lettuce, but onions and leeks should have been really started earlier than this. But look at the seed packets that you have already. And again, so if you compare, again, for something like tomatoes, usually they say 6 to 8 weeks to transplanting time. So look at other seed packets that you might be starting, stuff that you'll be starting indoors, whether it be cucumbers or peppers or eggplant or lettuce or Swiss chard. Some, if you're going to start some things indoors, usually on those packets will tell you how long ahead to start them. You know, that they may only say, for especially for cucumbers, 2 to 4 weeks. For lettuce, might be 3 to 6 weeks or ahead. And Swiss chard. I mean, and some of these, of course, we can certainly plant them outdoors also. And it's worth doing. We mentioned a little bit of that for just the timing of harvest for whether we're starting indoors versus outdoors. And if your ground thaws out, that you have no snow and you're, and it's not frozen, certainly get, as soon as the snow is gone, get some clear plastic on top of your beds to start warming it up. That's really one of the most important things we can do to push the season, to wake up, well, wake up the earthworms and the soil microorganisms and stuff, and make it better for, so we can plant into warmer soil. And to avoid getting it any more saturated than it already is with the spring rains and such.
Sure. Okay, so clear plastic, that's going to let the light through, but then kind of prevent some of the heat loss?
Yes, exactly. It will warm the, clear plastic will allow the sun to warm the soil better. Where black plastic, the plastic warms up, so it has to transfer the heat directly to the soil, but it really doesn't heat up as much. The advantage of black plastic is it does keep weeds down, but at this point we really want to warm that soil. So that's the best thing we can do. And once you've got some warm soil, you can mix in some fertilizer, and then if you're making hoops or something like that, again, get the hoops up, and so then if you've got some young transplants, some of that Swiss chard and kale, you know, that can go in, lettuce, that can go in probably by mid to late April. Again, with warm soil, then that keeps the air above it warmer, and that, of course, helps the plants grow better, and we're less likely to have, you know, late frost damage or something like that, too.
Well, those are great tips. All right, well, maybe that's a good place to leave it. Hope you enjoyed that out there, listeners. It's I'm getting excited just talking about it. You know what? you're talking about
me too. Warren. What can I say? If I can't be outdoors doing it, I'm doing it indoors.
Yeah. It's good to think about it. You really feel spring arriving when you start getting yourself in the gardening kind of state of mind, planning, preparing, and then, yeah, sprouting stuff, working the soil. Oh yeah, it's right around the corner.
Okay.
Okay, Ed. Well, thank you very much, and we'll talk to you pretty soon.
Yep.
Okay.
Good enough. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Big thank you to Ed Bajarski. Always so great. Our own master gardener.
There ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when you don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring.
And In the Garden with Ed Bajarski is sponsored in part by The Flower Farm. They are busting out with new starts for the coming season. Ready to go in the window, we've got lettuce and basil, Swiss chard, kale and spinach, ready to go. They're out there at 6 Rory Road. Their number is 772-3064.
Well, you can go out to eat, and that's for sure, but it's not. nothing a homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your very own tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs, you can eat them with gravy. Eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on a side, put them in the middle. Put a homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'll life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Johnny tomato seed, 'cause I know what this country needs. It's homegrown tomatoes in every yard you see. When I die, don't bury me in a box in a cemetery. Out in the garden be much better, and I could be pushing homegrown tomatoes.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'll life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. Homegrown tomatoes, what'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy.